Shanahan Christmas.
First time that's happened.
She's been wanting to sit on my lap.
That's so pretty. All right, we're here for the last case in the morning, 13-924 Disciplinary Counsel versus Joy Lenore Marshall. The respondent, Ms. Marshall.
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes rebuttal.
Proceed.
May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor. I'm Attorney Joyelle Marshall, the respondent in this case. This case is about an ethical and conscientious attorney, not a perfect attorney, who sought justice amongst the appearance of impropriety. But this hearing is an objection to the finding by the board. The Board of Grievances and Discipline found that respondent had violated professional conduct rule 8.2 in alleging bias of a judicial officer without basis. The board had also found that respondent had engaged in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, misrepresentation, a violation of DR 1-102A4. In addition, the board found that I had been involved in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice in violation of DR 1-102A5. And professional conduct rule 8.4D. In addition, I would like to address the recommendations of the board as a result of those findings.
Why don't you address the first finding, and that was the findings as they related to Judge Russo.
Yes, Justice O'Connor. The finding was that I had made false allegations of bias against Judge Russo. I disagree with those findings. This court found in Disciplinary Counsel versus O'Neill, and that's 103 Ohio State 3rd 204, that a judge cannot materially assist another at the expense of the other, and such advocacy creates the appearance, perhaps the reality, of the partiality of the judge.
But you did not have any support for your allegations.
I did have support, Your Honor. And some of the support that I had was the disparate treatment, and those are facts. The one fact is that Judge Russo held the client's funds in her fishbowl for 4 weeks without any orders.
But wait a minute, there was allegations of race. Was there not in the treatment?
In the disparate treatment, one of those was denied equal protection under
what
the law.
What basis did you have for those statements about a common pleas court judge?
Okay. Your Honor, the basis for those allegations was a disparate treatment argument. And those allegations stem from the fact that I was a black female, and William Campbell and Blake Dixon are white males. We were both in the same, basically the same situation.
You have something more than that?
Your Honor, it's a series of events related to how we were treated disparately. And if I may continue.
Sure.
Okay. And one of those was the fact that Mr. Campbell had filed a motion with the court. The court set a hearing on his motion. The court made orders pursuant to his motion. He was not a party. The court, once I had withdrawn off the case, ordered me to leave because I was not a party and because I was no longer counsel on the case. That's one example of disparate treatment. The other is that Mr. Campbell was granted an attorney fee of approximately $1,445 per hour. My attorney fee was approximately $12 per hour. The other is that Mr. Campbell was allowed what would have been a hearing. I was ordered to leave the court again, the courtroom, because I was not an attorney on the case and that I was no longer a party on the case. This was an open courtroom. It was open to the public. There were no outbursts or any sort of conduct that, in my experience, would have led a judge to order a person to leave the courtroom, especially when that hearing involved a person's property interest. So those are three examples of the disparate treatment. And based upon the fact that I was a member of the protected class, I basically made a parallel, an argument that would normally be allowed in an employment case under Title VII. Although Judge Russo is not an employer, this was an employment decision. The question was, what is the just compensation for services rendered?
It was a fee dispute between lawyers about the division of a settlement, right? That's where it all came from.
Your Honor, Justice O'Donnell, it was a fee dispute. It was a one-sided fee dispute. Basically, Mr. Campbell argued that he had performed 95% of the services that resulted in the fee that I obtained for my client.
Yes.
Yes.
And that matter is still being litigated, is it not?
That matter is still being litigated.
And then the controversy between yourself and Judge Russo arose because of certain orders that the court made, which allegedly you violated. And there's been some testimony and evidence to that effect. Is that right?
I disagree with that, Your Honor.
Oh, there's no finding that you violated the court order?
There are findings that I've violated several court orders.
Okay. And what is your response to those findings? Do you think you didn't, or what is it that we do with those findings?
Justice O'Donnell, the ruling of the Court of Appeals of the 8th District was that I violated it was the ruling of both courts. I'm sorry, the trial court in front of Judge Russo. She found that I had violated her orders. My argument, I still deny that that was a valid and existing order, the first, in which she ordered that Campbell would receive 95% of the fee. For one, because I was denied due process, I wasn't entitled to a hearing.
But all of that could have been appealed subsequently, couldn't it?
It was appealed. I had missed the deadline initially on the appeal of the initial order. The contempt was appealed and remanded for further hearing. The second contempt was that I had not produced the IALTA statements. There was a hearing scheduled, I believe, on September 21st of 2006, wherein I was ordered to produce the IALTA statements. I provided the IALTA statements, and Judge Russo read them into the record. She read the contents of the IALTA statement into the record. I believe it may have been Exhibit 38, page 17, line. No, that would not be it.
Well, I don't mean to take your time. We understand that there was a finding, though, that you had dispersed monies contrary to what the court had ordered.
Right, Your Honor, I'm sorry. The court had ordered that no more than $85,000 of the $150,000 settlement could be dispersed to the client.
Yes.
And that was pursuant to William Campbell's motion for a charging to enforce his charging lien. I hadn't dispersed any more than the $85,000. William Campbell dismissed his motion, and he stated, I wasn't there when I arrived at the hearing. No one was there. And he stated, the order stated that he intended to file the appropriate motion to intervene and refile his motion. It was at that time that I dispersed the remaining funds to the client. It was my impression that there was nothing pending before the court, and therefore that order terminated by its terms. There was nothing that order was attached to. That order was then prospective. If it was still valid, it would have to attach into a motion that he would later file.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, what's the nature of your practice?
Oh, I'm sorry, Justice Pfeiffer. I have a general practice, so I do several different things. I do domestic relations, and I do quite a bit of domestic relations. In domestic relations, we have interim orders all the time, and those interim orders expire. If a complaint or a motion is withdrawn or dismissed, then those orders expire, and that's basically the frame of reference that I had when that motion was withdrawn, is that there was nothing else. That case had been dismissed pursuant to 41A.
And the case that this trouble all started over was a claim against a nursing home for, I don't know whether you call it malpractice or malfeasance.
Yes, Your Honor, it was a nursing home negligence case.
All right, and was that unusual for your practice, or so? Is this the kind of case that the first one of this type that you'd handled, kind of thing?
It was a nursing home negligence. It was the first nursing home negligence case that I had.
Okay.
And that is one of the reasons why I retained co-counsel. I retained an attorney by the name of Edward Parks. He's been practicing law for about 30 years. And he used to work for the Department of Health in nursing home certification. And he had a lot of experience in determining the standard and breaches of standard for nursing
homes. And at the front of this, if I'm reading the report from the board correctly, you did start out by doing the right thing, and that is tell the client that the client's prior lawyer would have a claim for fees and to determine what the amount of that claim was going to be.
Yes, Your Honor. My advice to her was, before she made the decision to find another attorney, that she should, first of all, try and work it out with that attorney, because it was already in litigation. And it was burdensome for me to take over. It would be burdensome for any other attorney to take over. And, you know, she didn't know what the relationship would be like with a new attorney, and it was just probably more troublesome than keeping the same attorney. Mm-hmm. So I suggested that she stay, and at most that she should get a statement from that attorney stating what he believed the value of his services were, and that I wouldn't take the case until I had a statement from him stating what he believed the value of his services were.
And Ms. Marshall, you took the case, or you had a new fee agreement in February of 06, And the case was settled the next month, correct?
That is right,
and,
Justice
And previous Klesinger. Counsel had been working on the case since 2004 until you took over in February of 06.
That is correct.
At the hearing, wasn't it 32 or 33 hours that they were saying they were due and owing money for that time?
That is correct, 32.93.
Okay. They had a contract for 40% of the proceeds?
During the period of the contingent fee contract.
Right, and then they lowered that to one-third upon the settlement, correct?
That is what they said, Your Honor.
Okay, let me ask you, there's an allegation that your client cut you a check for $25,000 out of proceeds that you gave her.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And you retained that $25,000?
When she gave it to me initially, I didn't accept it, but I eventually did accept it. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and then you had your client sign an agreement that she would be responsible for any fees that were determined to be owed to Mr. Campbell and Mr. Dixon.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and then you received funds of, what amounted to one-third of the settlement, correct?
That is correct,
Plus reimbursement for costs or whatever?
That is correct.
Okay. Wasn't that one-third of the settlement in dispute? Wasn't that the issue? How you were going to divide the one-third of the settlement, correct?
Not to me, Your Honor.
That was in dispute before the court.
Not at that time, Your Honor.
Okay, so what you're saying is you took the full one-third plus fees, and that was okay to do, and it was okay to have your client sign an agreement that if any of this comes back to bite anybody, you know, from the determination that Mr. Campbell is due fees, that your client's going to have to pay that, and it wouldn't come out of the full one-third that you've paid yourself. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
If I may elaborate.
Counsel, wait a minute. I'm doing math. I've done some of this work in my youth. Are you answering the Chief Justice that of a $150,000 settlement on a case that you were on for 1 month, you earned a fee of $50,000, you earned a gift of $25,000, and your client earned the potential liability of another $50,000 from her former counsel? I'm not a real good math major, but that sounds like there's a potential that your client ended up with $25,000 out of $150,000.
That is not correct, Justice O'Neill.
Did she have to pay Friedman, Damiano, and Smith?
No, Your Honor.
They never got paid?
No, Your Honor.
Former counsel that put 2 years into the case never got paid?
No, Your Honor.
And you got paid $75,000?
No, Your Honor.
You didn't?
No, Your Honor.
The 25 you took from your client, you applied towards the $50,000 one-third fee. Is that correct?
It's partially correct. And, Your Honor, if you don't mind, I was paid the $25,000. And I did apply that towards the entire $50,000 contingent fee agreement. Now, if I may elaborate, prior counsel had put in 32.93 hours. His hourly rate is $250. By my math, if he were paid according to quantum merit, which would be the reasonable value of services rendered, which would be 250 times 32.93. If you add that to $50,000, it still does not exceed the 40%, which was his original contract, is what the client had intended that she would pay in fees when she hired him.
So, but in a fee dispute such as this, given the scenario that we have here where an attorney comes late to the game, and the majority of the work is done by previous counsel, it's standard for that one-third to be in play and to be divided between the counsel.
Your Honor, the previous attorney had not done the majority of the work. That's the whole problem.
You did the majority of the work in the 1 month that you were on the case?
That is correct. Myself and Mr. Parks, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, please keep note that prior counsel had only performed 32.93 hours. That's less than half of the amount of time I put in a week's worth of work.
Okay.
Did you care to address the sanction? The recommendation is that you should be suspended for 2 years with 1 year of that stayed.
Yes. Justice O'Donnell, first of all, I've been in the practice of law for 12 years, and I've been in private practice for 10. It's been, at that time, I was only in practice for 3 years. Even though it may seem, I guess, brash to this court, and maybe I sound arrogant, it's not, I've learned a valuable lesson, and it's not something that I would do again. The rules that were in place now weren't in place then, and that is, if there's a claim, you cannot disperse the funds. I thought I was doing what I could, or what was legally right. My client's funds, not only was my fee held up, but my client's funds, if I had received $25,000, that meant the remaining of the $65,000 belonged to my client minus 25. So that was $40,000 that was held up in what I've considered a baseless allegation that this attorney had performed 95% of the work. I wouldn't do that again if I were in that same situation. It's not worth it. I've been in jail. I've served 5 nights in jail. I've had to, every time I went to Cleveland, I've had to find a babysitter for my child. It's been an embarrassment. And I know that discipline is not intended to punish, but it's intended to protect. This is an isolated case. I hadn't done anything like it. I would never do it again. I don't think there's a need to protect the public from me. I do lots of public interest work. I do pro bono work for legal aid. And I serve on the board of the House of Hope. I'm a very conscientious attorney. I try to do the best for my clients. And I made a mistake.
What sanction are you asking us to consider?
Oh, I'm sorry, Justice O'Donnell. I would ask that the court consider staying the entire suspension.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
Madam Chief Justice, members of the court, I am Bruce Davis and I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel Relator in this matter. For her representation of Bessie Tyus, Ms. Marshall was paid $50,000, the largest fee she'd ever been paid. When it became clear that she would have to share a large portion of that fee with former counsel, she took advantage of an opportunity to gain possession of those funds. Hoping that possession was in fact 9/10 of the law, Ms. Marshall misappropriated $50,000 from her IOLTA account in violation of a court order.
She claims that the court order was no longer effective because opposing counsel had withdrawn their motion to have the funds divided.
That is her claim, Your Honor. And at this point, 3 separate courts have examined that claim. The Court of Appeals in Cuyahoga County, the United States Bankruptcy Court, and the Southern District of Ohio. All 3 have found that her claims hold no water, and 2 of those courts found that she acted with an intention to defraud former counsel and deprive them of any fee in this matter.
Counsel, does that explain the delay of what this happened in 2006? Here we are in 2013. Is it because of the federal court review in particular that caused the delay of so many years?
There was an incredible amount of litigation on this case. I believe over 20 motions were filed with 5 different courts. So yes, that's a portion of the delay was when there was a pending bankruptcy. That bankruptcy decision was appealed to the Southern District. There were multiple motions for reconsideration and disqualification filed with this court, which delayed things in Cuyahoga County. Almost every decision in Cuyahoga County was appealed to the 8th District, which accounted for further delay. So yes, Your Honor, the multitude of litigation here was responsible for the fact that we still have no resolution and former counsel hasn't been paid 7 years later.
Is that primary case still pending, the fee dispute between the respondent and former counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. The case pending in the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas between former counsel and Ms. Marshall has been remanded back from the Court of Appeals and was not then prosecuted when it was remanded. Former counsel had hoped that he would receive restitution through this disciplinary process. Given that I don't believe the board found that there were facts on which to attach a solid number to be restitution, he now plans to reinstitute his litigation.
Well, you say he plans to. Is it pending or is it contemplated that it will be pending at some point?
The case is still in pending status, but he had not pursued.
Is it stayed with the Court of Common Pleas, or is it been dismissed and he's going to refile?
It has not been dismissed, Your Honor.
So it's stayed?
Yes.
And is it before Judge Russo?
No. It was before Judge McGinty. He's now the prosecutor in Cleveland, so it would be in front of whichever judge inherited his docket.
Thank you.
All right, let me draw your attention to the allegations of racial motivation against Judge Russo, which I think are the most disconcerting and concerning, to me at least. What's the position on that?
Your Honor, the allegations that were in Ms. Marshall's brief filed on May 1st, 2008 with the 8th District contained allegations of racial and gender bias, and it was literally three sentences with no factual basis whatsoever. In an age when sensational supposition and suggestion are literally the same thing as news, attorneys bear a great responsibility to make sure that any allegations of bias they make against a judicial officer have a sound factual basis. In this case, to this day, Ms. Marshall cannot stand on a single fact which supports her allegations of racial bias. She says that she was treated differently from opposing counsel. That could be accounted for any number of reasons. The judge could have thought she was incompetent. The judge could think that she was moving for fees that she didn't deserve after 1 month of work. The judge could have been biased because she wasn't from Cleveland. But there was nothing in the record to suggest any racial or gender bias whatsoever.
Counsel, could I direct you to paragraph 76 of the order? Because there was a concern. It says the three things of being denied a hearing, and prevention from cross-examination of the attorney Parks. And the third thing was dismissing the Ms. Marshall from the courtroom. Those three things the panel found troubling. Do you have any additional information on those particular points?
I don't. I believe the Office of Disciplinary Counsel would echo the board's concern that that behavior was troubling. But again, there's nothing in that behavior from Judge Russo that indicates a racial or gender-based motive.
You're saying more than disparate impact must be shown.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Both under the case law that's related to employment discrimination that the respondent cites, but most importantly under the Gardner test, which allows attorneys to exercise their free speech rights, but only with a reasonable factual basis to do so. I think, Chief
Counsel, I want to back up to what got this started. The facts here are, there's just a lot of facts, I guess. Was she wrong, the respondent, in her initial advice to the client who was thinking about discharging her first lawyer, that what would be owed if her client discharged the lawyer would be quantum merit?
I think in general that's sound advice. When you're transferring from one attorney to another while a case is pending, that attorney has done some amount of work and should be recompensed for that. I believe that's sound advice. But unfortunately, her own actions cut against her advice to her client. She withdrew the $50,000 from her IOLTA account, depriving former counsel of any opportunity to recover those funds, regardless of how the litigation turned out. And that's really the crux of the ethical violation here. It's that Ms. Marshall took these funds out of her IOLTA account in violation of a court order so that the funds were unrecoverable. If you look at how these funds were taken out of her IOLTA, the first one, the first $25,000, the first half of her fee, was wired to her client and then mysteriously returned as a $25,000 gift.
And did she put that in the IOLTA, or did she put it in her personal account?
The returned check, I believe it went into a personal account.
Okay.
Those funds were immediately used to pay credit card debts and student loan debts, so that those funds are unrecoverable to former counsel. The second $25,000 of her fee that came out of her IOLTA account were dispersed in cash, and then the IOLTA account was closed. Again, making these funds unrecoverable to former counsel.
But when you say they're unrecoverable, you mean the same dollars are not recoverable, but obviously you could have a judgment against the counsel for that amount of money that she would then have to pay through other means.
You could, and as we see how this litigation progressed going to the bankruptcy court, the funds that should have been part of this one-third pot shared between counsels who contributed to the Tyus lawsuit, that money disappeared. I'm sorry.
I interrupted your thought. But she was found in contempt.
Three separate times,
right.
Your Honor.
And she served a punishment.
She did.
A serious punishment for contempt. So if we look at the purpose as being to protect the public, what additional, isn't this sanction really talking about punishment? Or is there a suspension that you think at this point, more than seven years later, is needed to protect the public now? What's your argument in favor of protecting the public?
I believe her behavior throughout this shows an attorney whose fitness to practice law is questionable. The decisions that she made here were very bad ones. And regardless of how many courts told her her behavior was wrong, to this day, she says, I did nothing wrong. Her objections filed with this court take no responsibility whatsoever for her actions. It's that reasoning that we see as a lack of fitness to practice law. And the person who, or the parties, who I believe she posed the greatest threat to, that these facts show, is she actually poses a threat to the court system in Ohio. She absolutely refused to cooperate with Judge Russo's investigation as to what had happened to this money. She refused to answer her questions or misled her. She then failed to supply her with financial documents that would have showed how the funds were dispersed. The parties harmed in this case are opposing counsel, who's still a member of the public, and the judiciary system.
Opposing counsel, you mean former counsel?
I'm sorry, yes, that's correct.
So her one big sin is she has made it difficult or impossible for former counsel to recover quantum merit of for 33 hours. Is there a dispute about the hours?
I don't believe there's a dispute about the hours, Your Honor.
And then she said some things about the judge in a brief.
That's correct.
Was that widely disseminated to the public, what she said there?
I'm not aware that.
I mean, it's available to the public, but was Judge Russo damaged by publicity of what was said in the brief?
To date, I am not aware of that. However,
we have some other cases where lawyers said some things in briefs that they shouldn't have as well. And usually, in appellate briefs, or in briefs even to the court, nobody knows about it, really, except the judge and the other lawyers. And that would be the case here, I take it.
So far, I think that's fair. Honestly, in today's world, though, this is a public document, and depending on where the election cycle falls, an allegation of this sort can have an incredibly damaging
effect. I assume Judge Russo has gone through an election since this was...
2008 is when the statement was made.
Okay.
So...
Perhaps.
Perhaps. Right. But Chief Justice Moyer, in re-disqualification of Cunningham, said that allegations of this sort against a judge are among the most serious and damaging claims that can be directed at a judge. The fact that these allegations weren't made public doesn't mean that the behavior itself should not be
sanctioned. That. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how much actual damage did the judge incur up to this point.
I think that that statement was just one incident in a long line of Ms. Marshall ignoring and defying court orders or giving testimony under oath that at best is misleading. This is a symptom of a larger problem.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to think through this in terms of if you're Judge Russo in Cleveland, the family name's been sort of drug around recently due to other people that are unrelated. So you have those kind of problems as well, but not due to a lawyer who appeared in front of you.
I guess I can't speak too much to that, Your Honor.
There were also several affidavits of disqualification that Ms. Marshall filed with the late Chief Justice, and the first one was denied. A short time later, she filed another one, which was again denied. So it seems to me that there were many avenues of attack that was employed, and each one against the judge. And that's my concern here. You know, the fact that, the initial, their former client, former attorney did not receive the quantum merit, that can be dealt with in the courts. But, you know, I wholeheartedly agree with Tom Moyer's reasoning in the disqualification of Cunningham and the statements and the fact that, you know, every avenue that was employed by Ms. Marshall to discredit a sitting judge was done, and every time she came up against a brick wall, that these were meritless, and yet that didn't deter her. And as she states here today, earlier, she does believe, even though there's no foundation, and that to me is troubling, very troubling.
Yes, Your Honor. The motions filed here with this court were so excessive and meritless that this court actually sanctioned Ms. Marshall. And then the behavior still continued in other courts. When we talk about the reason for the sanction and the threat to the public, this is what we are concerned about. Constantly filing and pursuing avenues that are meritless. That shows a pattern of behavior, a lack of judgment that an attorney must have in order to be fit to practice law in this state. That's what we're concerned about protecting the public from. Your Honors, I see my time is expiring.
What is the sanction that you are seeking or asking us to impose, and what is the basis of that?
Your Honor, we did not object to the recommendation of the Board of Commissioners. Their recommendation was to impose a 2-year suspension from the practice of law with 1 year stayed on the condition that Ms. Marshall pay former counsel what is due to them under a quantum merit theory.
And how much money is that?
Here's the issue, Your Honor, and I think this is what you're getting at. That litigation is pending, so we don't have a number yet. And so Former counsel has said he will pursue that.
Is there some reason why that case is still pending?
There was a huge amount of delay because of bankruptcy and appeal court involvement, but the reason that it is still pending is because former counsel had hoped that he would get restitution through the disciplinary process, and so he...
Well, how would he do that if there was some determination yet to be made by a trial court? What kind of hope was that?
I don't think a very good one, but that was his reasoning in not pursuing it while this case was pending in the disciplinary system.
What is the claim that former counsel has in terms of dollars in that case?
He has, the theory that he put forward was not I should be paid for 32 odd hours. It was I deserve the proportion of work that I did out of, applied to the proportion of the total fee. He said, I worked on this case for more than, for approximately 2 years.
Was it a contingent fee arrangement?
Yes, sir.
One third?
It was actually 40%, but for the purposes of math and doing this fee dispute in front of Judge Russo, he said I would be willing to accept one third because otherwise the math would have been totally convoluted.
So former counsel is looking at something in the $50,000 to $60,000 range of fees.
The judgment that he already received from the Court of Common Pleas in Cleveland was for $50,000, $51,000, including his costs. That's the judgment that's out there right now. And it was sent back from the Court of Appeals after summary judgment, and the Court of Appeals wanted to see more factual basis for that
number. Well, they have to have a fee dispute hearing within the Court of Common Pleas. That number will be what it is, and that will be one of the conditions for the one-year stay.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's what the panel had recommended, although the panel had said leave the amount open because it was not fully developed. The amount was not fully developed.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
And was there going to be a judgment for that amount, or was it to be paid as a condition of reinstatement?
Paid, Your Honor.
And that's what your recommendation is to us?
It is, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Marshall, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
I would like to ask this court to remember that the Court of Appeals has remanded for further hearing. And so there, I've never had a hearing on what the amount of fees I am owed or the value of my work. And I will add that I never intended to discredit Judge Russo. That was never my intention. I was basically seeking help from the appellate courts. I wanted some sort of oversight.
So, thank you.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, and counsel will be notified of our decisions. Marshal, will you please adjourn court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.